What's up, Ruggers? Welcome back to Beyond the Try Line. This is episode 3, Legendary. I'm your host, Huntley Anderson, and I'm joined today by two of the legends of the game. Welcome, gentlemen.
Thank you very much.
That's Roy Calvert and Rowan Love.
You know, Huntley, originally you said Rowan Love. I wasn't sure you were talking about. If you had said the legendary...
Yogi.
All of two brothers. Right? The legendary Yogi.
We'd have known exactly his own.
Yeah, man.
So it's a great pleasure having you both, gentlemen. It's a great pleasure.
It's a pleasure. Yeah, man.
Same here.
So today we'll take a deep dive into the tales of the legends, your experiences with highlights of what new participants should focus on to be successful ruggers. So gentlemen, let's begin. Tell the listeners a little bit about yourselves.
You can go ahead. Age before you.
All right. I can take the little, you know, as you said, you know, the introduction, Rowan Love as Yogi, you know, one of the first start of rugby, 80, straight through, you know, come through as junior player, school, junior national team, senior team, make it all the way to chairman and national court, which the coach of Mr. Anderson himself. So it's a great pleasure. And it's at a national level and against him in club level.
Right?
Yeah, well... My story don't go as far back as Yogi's. I started playing rugby in 1993 as a student of the prestigious Calabar High School. I remember my first interaction with the game is that, because in those days, you know, it was all hyped about the American sports. You know, the NFL, NBA, that is all we youngsters knew about. So when I went to Calabar, I heard that they had rugby. I mean, my impression that it was the same as what they call American football. And I remember my first coach being Mr. Junior Thompson. That's a very popular name in rugby in Jamaica. The last name, Thompson.
Yeah.
I remember going to the first meeting. I was in first form, and I remember somebody asked a question, "Sir, when we can wear helmets?" And Junior's response was, "When you ride your bicycle." And it's at that point I realized that, okay, this is a different sport. Through the years, I have had the pleasure of representing the school and the country at all various levels, junior and senior. I started out just being a regular player, because I think the perception is that, and what drew me to rugby, there's a place on the field for every single person. Yeah. You know, no matter what your fitness level, no matter what your ability level, it's a sport that is welcoming to all. You know, and that drew me to it, and the camaraderie between players. Some of my lifelong friends now are players who have been born through rugby. It's an international language. You know, I've traveled as far as Scotland, and once you meet that rugby signal, a rugby pass signal, and somebody has make it to you, it's like you're instantly brothers.
Yeah.
You know, so that is how I became started. Is at Calabar, I remember that famous meeting. And Junior used to fling stone half away. Remember all them look at something there, you know, because you must say, boy, you must learn to run the spaces and not faces. So if you can dodge a stone them, You can dodge the tackler. You know, so little thing like those kind of, you know, as little boys, we like play them something there, so it kind of drew me more to the sport.
Yeah. So you guys really got started early, and as I said to you before, both of you are two of my legends in the game, and just hearing your experiences, just started, how it is that you got started, and the levels that you played at, I can genuinely tell you, most of those accolades that you'd have just listed, I myself might know of them, but the listeners or participants that are currently entering the game don't really know the legends of the game, or even models that they can look up to, and understanding where it is that the sport started and what is the core values of the sport. And that is one of the things why I would have really introduced you guys to the podcast, just to capture for the listeners how it is that the sport journeyed from the 80s coming through. And while Love is from the 80s in terms of his involvement coming straight through, Raw, you would have been from the 90s. So again, it captures two separate generations, and it just goes to show that there is a legend or legends within each of the generations that we would have had. Yeah. What was that
you
were saying?
Yeah, and I said, brother, what this was created, you know? The legend, the ways in which you can literally just meet a person, and like Roy said, once that name, once that rugby pops up, anywhere you are, you're recognized just by playing rugby itself. So, yeah, man.
Yeah, I mean, as I said, some of my fun experiences, and I mean, I would love to talk about the brotherhood. I think some way we have lost that. I think the younger players now might be upset with me saying this, but I think we have a lot of prima donnas, who you can't appreciate what you don't know.
Right. Yeah.
And you know, as I said, they don't know where the sport is coming from. I remember having to, you know, I grew up in Arnett Gardens, sometimes in Vineyard Town, and I remember every Saturday morning I used to have to catch a bus to Half a Tree. Wait on Robert Stevens' van to come pick up Half a Tree and bring us to Caymanas.
Well,
you know, and you are at Caymanas for the entire day.
Yeah.
You play schoolboy rugby, you play club rugby, and you were never hungry.
Yeah.
You were never once in danger.
Yeah.
Your parents, there's no phone for your parents to call and find out if you're okay.
Yeah.
Well, I know.
You know.
Go ahead, love.
Yeah, man. You know, as well, I touch that still, you know, like, you know, to a point where a lot of the youths of us today who really don't even know why they even playing the sports or what the sports is really about, what's actually started, you know?
Yeah.
As one of the first schoolboy team in 1980, when we're gonna go back to Thompson again, like it's a very popular name in the sport.
Yeah.
A gentleman named Thompson brought to school level from the military, because rugby actually started, you know, and he used to have ships with expatriates from the England who came down, and that's how rugby introduced to Jamaica. Then you have Jacob, you know, who took it to another level and see it for the could have created a revenue for him and help for a lot of youth. You know why I'm going to touch that part, right? Because of what you said about you coming up from Vineyard Town and have to wait and Robert to pick you up. You know, when I started off in the East with players myself, like Norman Hart and Lionel Bingham and a lot of guys that some of you never knew about. when we have to take the bus from town, it's not like our days, Mr. Anderson, we have a school bus to take us to take us back to school. It was nothing like that. We used to have to catch the bus from school, downtown, catch the bus from downtown, Spanish Town to catch.
Yeah.
And while doing all of that, we in the sugar cane going down the road, and like what I said, we're never hungry, we're never tired, and we get there and we play a touch game. Finish, you walk back, and you have your teammates with you and the other team that you just don't. So there's a lot to rugby that the fellows them need to know. Just last Mr. Calvert again. You know what I'm saying? So it's a pleasure, Mr. Anderson, to be here.
Yeah.
You know?
And it's one of the things then for me when time I hear both of your experiences thus far is it was hectic, but you found ways to manage that. So what I got from both of your experiences thus far is that it was hectic being a rugby player, but you guys found ways how to manage that.
Only you see, experience is a hell of a thing, you know. But then I never see it as being hectic.
Yeah.
There you go. We never see it as a challenge.
I don't see it as something that you do because you love playing rugby. It was never a bother.
Yeah. So it's beyond the barriers, you know, having that positive mindset, knowing that it's a challenge. It's not hectic. It is just what you're doing because you love it.
Yeah, man. And I have to turn up for my team. Even if you take 2 or 3 bus, you have to turn up for my team. Because guess what? Today my team I play against a side where I have a only Anderson, I have a Rowan Love, I have a Christopher Green. Yeah? So I can't turn my teammates. I have to turn up. So whatever the situation is, I have to find a way. And that taught me greater life lessons, that I don't turn the back on people who are dependent on me.
Yeah.
Well, you know, I don't know if we can elaborate a little more upon it, Mr. Anderson. We don't know the time settings, but...
Yeah, man. Anything that you want to share, man.
Alright, remember even as a youth when I was at George's coaching you guys, I was a coach within the first segment, and after we're done, we sit down and reason like we're brothers. Because like I said, I'm never going to be you guys' father. I want to be you guys' brothers when we're done training. I treat you guys with respect. You see, the thing that brought the passion of me coaching you guys and coaching all them other guys from St. George's, Vauxhall to national level, it's where I'm going to touch just back where I started in rugby at age 11. And I'm going to touch a deep part. At age 11, I come to acting school, attempted murder. And I was about to get kicked out of school. And a teacher, when one teacher said, we got to get rid of him because he's angry and he's aggressive and, you know, put him to society. In the 80s, we didn't have the future of what enough of these kids have right now, or the privilege what enough of these kids have right now, growing up in the inner circle.
Yeah.
You see, man? When we talk about middle class, then your parents have to have something. You know what I'm saying? And growing up in a middle class, but just a stubborn kid, where my dad was a custom officer, I was very strict. And I went to school being sick and being bullied. And I couldn't go to my old man and tell him, say, me, I get bullied. And I'm talking to teachers and telling them I'm being bullied and nobody listened to I. But when I stood up for myself, I almost get charged for attempted murder when I was placed into rugby. And I can lift my cap up to D and say, if it wasn't for rugby, we wouldn't have been having this conversation. Yeah. We would not. You see, because it was prevalent them time there where you just gone the other way. You know? But a teacher named Clive Powell who said, no, we're not going to put Mr. Love out on the street to become a statistic. We're going to put him in a rugby. And at that time, I never really have a choice because I couldn't go home and tell my dad 6 months into school, I was going to be kicked out of school. Go home and tell my mom. That would have probably killed her right there because I was like 10 to 14 kids. But my mom treat all of her kids as if she only have one.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? So it's a pleasure of him having this conversation where we show people say, no matter how deep you're down in the bottom, if you find sports, I'm gonna love this not just to be to rugby players, but for other, but the people in the politics also for understand. So if we find something positive, we give the youth them, we'll have a better society.
Yeah, yeah.
You know what I'm saying? We would have a better society because like I was talking to you the other day and I told you, it's an honor and a privilege just to watch you as a kid knowing you at about, what, 15
yeah.
years old?
Yeah.
You know? Teaching you rugby in Georgia and you tell me you couldn't play it and, you know, we can't play. You just start playing, so I'm going to put you as a team. You know? And I have to tell you, say, listen, it's from the heart. Yeah. When you have players around you like Delano Thomas and Delano Fulham, David Hudson, yeah. one of my legend, even though him passed, my name Steve Richard. Right, you open a can of worms, my brother. Trust me, my dust. You know? So where I am today and where I could have been yesterday, it's all to rugby and meeting you guys.
Yeah. And as I said to your coach, just listening to that testimony, how it is that you got started, it just reinforced for me what are some of the challenges that our listeners, our players within our community is going through. And I would have known of instances where pretty much majority of the youngsters that we would have had at St. George's College or even through the other programs, when they come to us, I would have realized that they would have had different challenges with the law or with juvenile delinquency. And for me, they always say how it is that I remain positive just to have them in the space knowing that they might be in run-ins with the law and trying to correct that with them to let them know that it is really using the sport or having the sport as a vehicle to teach them the best practices of life. And that is something that I know Roy prides himself on as well.
It is very important. I think it's a cultural thing. I mean, Yogi taught some things where I bring it back in the 90s or even early 2000s. I think as a country, and I'm going wider now, but I learned this from rugby. In a country, we have a lot of hindsight, but no foresight.
Yeah.
And no we foresight. Don't look at the opportunities that this can garner, but we look at opportunities lost. And I say that to say that, you know, Yogi spoke about rugby. I can tell people, rugby saved my life. You know, I was a quiet kid, but I was a smart-mouthed kid.
Yeah.
You know, I always... right, and we're getting up people head wickedly. It was getting me in that trouble. And just knowing that on a Saturday, instead of me going somewhere and picking up a gun, going somewhere and getting involved with unsavory people, I have teammates who are come pick me up and I can jam with them for the whole day. I'm not go back home till 9, 10 o'clock at night time. And a Sunday morning too, you might have national training. So you have to go to that too.
Yeah.
This opportunity was placed there to keep me out of other opportunities. You know, and it's not until you, as Yogi say, become older, you kind of start appreciate certain things. Because I tell people something, Robert Stevenson, who call Robbie, has taught me throughout my life. Anybody who know me, if you ask them what I'm a stickler for, they tell you time. Yeah. I like to be on time. Robbie taught me that from an early age.
Yeah.
Yeah. If Robbie, are you Burger? Burger used to pick me up every Tuesday or Thursday if I go camp or up and you go play tag when I was 14, 15.
And that's Carlisle Burger that they make reference.
Carlisle Burger, yeah man. And yeah. I never play for his club. I was just another youngster. You understand? But yeah, we used to look out for each other. And I know so if Burger said to me, say, right, meet me up the bus stop at Mountain View, 5 o'clock. I can't reach 505 because 505 Burger gone.
Yeah.
Robbie was the same thing. Robbie was worse. Robbie told him, meet him at half a tree, 9 o'clock. 901, you see Robbie Van, kick up speed, I go up the road. You have to run him down to catch him. Yeah. So, to me, there's a lot of underlining lessons that we learn through sports. You know, camaraderie, respect for others, dependency, loyalty, proper planning. Because I said, we are good in hindsight, coulda, shoulda, never.
Yeah.
But in foresight, we don't prepare for what is going to happen. How many of us, and I'm going to segue, if you don't mind, Mr. Host, into preparation as a player?
Yeah.
As I said, when I started playing, I was never, even throughout my career, I was never the most talented person. But I always pride myself on being the most prepared. You know, started playing.
Yeah.
They used to just put you in any position that's available. Yeah, man, any position available. If you're weighty, you're going to scrum. If you're fast, you go up on the wing. Yeah. But then something I realized, I had a neighbor on me, because I never have cable. Right? I used to have TV where you have to beat the side feet, come on.
Yeah.
I used to have a neighbor with cable and she has a VCR. And I realized that rugby used to come on. She never have an extra TV in her house. So every night I used to borrow my mother TV. Take up the TV to the living room, go over my neighbor yard, go plug it in.
Yeah.
I'm going to watch rugby. And what I started to realize then is that there are people on the field who have specialized skills.
Yeah.
You know, well, and I started to look within my own environment. And so, all right, I realized the big man ain't going to scrum. Fast man ain't go up on the wing. You know, but then you have scrum off and stand up. But scrum off and stand up, them man a run too. Them always run first and pass whenever they can't run.
Yeah.
But when I started watching my favorite all-time rugby player with a league or union, Joost van der Westhuizen from South Africa.
Yeah.
I realized that the man was a specialist passer and him run when he can't pass. Right? So then I realized that, but well, how many of us can pass the ball consistently 100 times, left and right hand, and hit the standoff over and over? And that's what I started doing because I realized that not many other persons were doing that. Everybody wanted to run, but nobody wanted to put a player to a gap.
As you said that, I just want to drive home for the listeners right here. I think that for you, that was one of the things that placed you in the category of legendary for me. Based on how it is that you execute the fundamentals of the game, that was something as a youngster coming in, playing against you, seeing you, even in your coaching, that was something that I admired. How it is that you do the basics well. It is not about the player, it's not about all the other additives that are there. And for love, when I started playing, I was pure speed. But when I watch Coach Love play, the fundamentals was always at the heart of what it is that he does. Passing, tackling.
Well, you see, one thing that I take away, and I've always talked about it. See, any of you know about Jonah Lomu from New Zealand?
Yeah.
All right. You see, when I start to play rugby and get involved in the rugby thing, I idolize three person in myself. Have you guys ever seen the movie Rocky?
Yes.
Sylvester Stallone.
Yes.
That's where I do, that's how I used to do my training. People still today try to figure out how I maintain my body.
Oh, Yogi, I thought you were going to say you play rugby like a Rocky fight.
Well, that too, you know. That too, you know. Because, yeah, you don't know once you have the Love Brothers, them on the field, which is me and my brother, Cable. A fight gonna happen, you know.
But the beauty about it is that when you're done playing, fight or not, them same man have come up and you have life for them.
Come on.
I think we have a last
man. Yeah, you have to. You have to. Well, now, you know, you see, when I asked Mr. Anderson, when I started to coach them, and one thing I love is the fact that when I started at Judges, and I don't remember the coach name for the sportsmaster.
Mr.
Judges, Mr. Anderson.
Mr. Douglas, Fernando Douglas.
Yeah, right. Douglas. He gave me an office for myself. He said, listen, whatever you want, right there, that's your spot. And one thing I always emphasize on is timing. Because growing up is one thing I know Jamaican not good at, is timing. You tell them 10 o'clock and them show up 2 o'clock. So, one thing when I started coaching you guys, my thing was timing. From I was growing up, my grandparents are British. So, their thing is timing. Be there a half an hour early, not 5 seconds late.
Yeah.
You know? So, a lot of things that you're touching on, right, is where it drives a lot of who I am.
Yeah,
you know.
What
started off, as I said, as a troubled kid to finish my career as a national coach.
Looking back at the preparation, so I started passing. You know, I start bring on the ball and from Calabar. Them time they know. I'ma tell you, the guys nowadays they don't know how good they have it. Them time a one ball school up one ball. No, Mrs. School at train and bring out two back full of ball. One ball. I'm used to
you guys lucky you had ball. A pattern box you used to play with.
So I started learn to pass. Learn to pass. And then it was Jeffrey Salesman who came to Calabar to coach when I was in third form. Come to me and say, no, say you're a good little player.
Yeah.
Never put your ass come off. And all I want for you to do is just get those passes, just hit the man every single time. That started to simplify my game. But then I realized that if I'm passing consistently, there comes a time when the defense is going to expect me to pass, and that will be my opportunity to run.
Yeah.
So I started passing, but looking upfield, looking for my opportunity over. That is how I build my game. Then the same Mr. Thompson now used to coach Caribs, and he has a very famous phrase. I don't know if any of you guys remember. That was before I started playing senior league. Once they get a penalty, his famous phrase was "Up and under." Up and under.
Up and under.
I was watching the international game, and I started to watch Andrew Mertens, who is an All Black.
Yeah.
Very good standard, but very lethal with the boot. And then I started to say, but hold on, but we get the penalty, then we can't kick for 3 points.
Yeah.
So why am I going to go up and under when there's an opportunity for me to score 3 points? And even if I miss, there's an opportunity that they have to give me back the ball. So I said to myself, all right, I'm going to start learning to kick. Yeah. And I made my own tea out of chiffon container, and I started to kick 20, 30 kicks a day.
Whoa.
Then I realized that I was more successful at certain points of the field. So where did me start though? They want my team to go to that spot of the field and look for a penalty.
Yeah.
Right? Enough time it was against Yogi's team. So getting a somebody head, them swing off of me or them tongue me or something. Get a penalty, 3 points. So we have to have some foresight. We have to look at younger players. What I encourage them to do. Stop trying to do what everybody else is doing. Everybody can step, everybody can run. But can you pass? Can you kick? And kick don't mean just put your foot to the ball. The ball is aerodynamically shaped, different from a football. So you can't kick it the same way. Study when you kick the ball.
Can you miss a tackle from anyone that love them?
All right. So we have to... Player preparation is very important. And I don't get the impression that the players of today. I think it's getting better, you know, through only your program with Young Cracks. I think it's getting better. But I think those guys need to do preparation on their own because you're only seeing them X number of hours for the week.
So the next question I would ask you is, how critical was your grassroots experience to your development, doing the basics well?
You know, it was very important. It was very important because I tell you what, my first trip to Canada, I was a captain at under 15 team. This was about 95 or 96. I was a captain at under 15 team that went to Canada. And a lot of these guys out here, we have a run through crowd. Listen, when you're playing against international team, everybody is as big as you. So everybody's as big as you. Everybody's as fast as you too.
Yeah.
And even if you're faster than them, who is going to get you the ball when everybody are run? Right? So me understanding and having coaches that appreciate that. Because again, you know, you can have skills that coaches don't know how to use within a team. You know, as I said, I have been blessed with having good coaches. First Junior Thompson, then salesman, and then when I started playing for a club in about Fort Farm, I had Dr. Anthony Greenaway as my coach, New Zealander as my coach.
Yeah.
And he started to encourage the passing, but then he started to encourage me, vary your pass, you know, take your speed off of the pass whenever it's a shorter ball. You know, learn to run your angles out of the rock. Those are the things that he started to encourage. You know, so having that basic goal, I know that I'm confident that my passes can get me out of any situation, allow me to branch off into other things. You know, so if I meet another scrum half, another opponent who's just as fast as I am, I can fall back on my passing to beat him.
And that was just as a player. Now, for in terms of coaching for you, How you see that grassroots, how you fit that into your grassroots programs that you do have?
All right. I look at coaching as a ladder. You have first rung, second rung, third rung. As a coach, for me, the first thing is fitness. You can't play the sport unless you're fit. And no matter how big or small you are, there is a level of fitness that you can achieve. Yeah? And so my first rung on my ladder is fitness. You have to get to a certain level of fitness. Whether you're playing amateur, semi-pro or pro, there's a certain level that you have to attain. Once you complete that first rung, you go to the second rung, which can be tied in with the first rung, which is skills development. Your passing, your tackling, your support running, which is one that we sometimes neglect. Support running is actually a skill.
Yeah.
Because as a nation, we are selfish, and unless we're getting the glory, we don't want support, which is why we do so well in track and field, you know.
Yes, yes.
It's just me alone I run. Right?
So for one of each other.
Yeah, man, we're not preparing for nobody. So support running is actually a skill that we need to teach. Because whether or not you get the ball, you can draw an opponent off your teammate. Yeah? So that second rung is your skills. Tackling, passing, support running, and for specific positions, kicking. The third rung for me is game situation. So you start put those skills now, how do you use them at different points of the field, in different game situation, at different time of the game. And then the fourth rung, which is the most difficult for most coaches, is sitting back and making your players play. I have done my job. I have helped you to get fit. I have taught you the skills. I have put you in positions, teaching you how to use those skills. Now is your time to execute. So on match day, I don't rile up myself much. But my players know that if you don't execute first, second, third rung, then we're going to work back from the bottom rung, which is fitness. Nobody likes fitness.
Yeah.
So in a particular game, if you don't execute, you could know that the next session, you are going to run. Because obviously, the reason you didn't execute is because I have done something wrong. I take personal response as a coach. So let us go back to the first round. Now, you're asking, why is this important? All right. You see, once you're fit only, if the second round is failing you, you're passing, the passing bad or balls are just dropping, the field is wet, are you just having a bad day with passing, you can always go back to running.
Yeah.
Because you have developed that foundation. If your game situation, if the game changes and how you're prepared for is not what your opponents putting out or what your own team putting out, you can always go back to simple skills execution and build back up. So that is how grassroots has taught me. You need to build. Some players play now, and I look at some coaches and even players, the first thing they learn to do is step in. You know, step past a man, step past. So we're going to meet it. We're going to meet a defender who you can't step past. You can't pass and you're unfit, because they say it all the while, and enough local players cost me. Enough of them cannot make it through a very good tackle. One tackle and they're out of the game for the rest of the game.
Two things for me. One is the surface that we're playing the sport on. So some schools or coaches, our programs don't really facilitate much tackling because of the dangers that might come with teaching them to develop that aspect of their game. And the second one is, as you said, we have a selfish culture. And the selfish culture is, I am in the game only to run and to score. I don't see myself in the bigger picture of becoming a part of a youth, of the youth type of execution. And that is something that we definitely have to explore, because I think I will put it out there on a limb to say tackling is maybe Jamaica's greatest concern right now at any level. Whether it is
I will from my experience, and no, I'm letting you know how I coach.
Yes.
Based on the results that I've seen, there's a fundamental difference between tackling and defending. There's a fundamental difference. The weakest part of my game was tackling, because I said, I never like the ground, and then me feel like say, if I tackle and get injured, but now I can pass effectively, I'm going to let down my team. That's how I thought. Yes, Yogi.
Can I interject?
Yeah.
All right. You see, I was watching even the last set of game that Jamaica play on an international level. Not just on the schoolboy level, but even on the international level.
Mm-hmm.
We have no tacklers.
Mm-hmm.
We don't.
All right. Tackling is a individual skill. Defending is a team activity.
Yeah.
A lot of times, why we do not tackle well is that we are not in position to make a tackle. Or we tackle, we have to be in a position to defend. And I have seen a lot of times where we're playing against team, both league and union, and an overlap is being created against us. 2-1, 3-2, 3-1. And if that player was an effective defender, who could have nullified the threat. We don't do well with team. I go back to the same culture thing.
Unit execution.
Yes, we don't like to work. Right. We don't like to work in a. All right, let me tell you something, Huntley. And I've seen it. And Yogi, you can go back and watch some of the games. You see, if you have a one-on-one situation, a foreigner versus a Jamaican one-on-one, 90% of the time, the Jamaican make a tackle. If you have a 2-v-2 situation, or a 3-v-2, or a 3-v-3, somebody there is going to miss the tackle. I don't understand what I try to get at.
Yeah, man. I understand. Yeah.
So we are all eyes are going to be on me for that one-on-one tackle. Me and make that, the cannibal not laugh for me. Here it is, 3-we versus 3-them. If you miss my tackle, me can blame somebody else and say, oh, me think you come cross. Oh, yeah. but me see them, you understand? So the defending part of it is where me I say, I think that. Yes, Yogi, so you can finish.
Yeah, man. But like I'm saying, though, I mean, it also depends. That tackling is also can be a team thing, you know.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Anderson, you remember when we went to St. Vincent?
Yes.
And we were supposed to take 15 players.
Yeah.
And we took 12.
Not 12, it was 11. We only have
11. I'm going to touch this first, right? And then tell you what the problem is now. You see me? You see, when we get there, all of my players know that tackling is a team thing. Defense is teamwork. Offense is teamwork. Because if you beat one person, you beat the team. Because then we never have no substitution.
Yeah.
See me? So everybody have to make sure they make the tackle. Everybody have to make sure they're ready to overlap in case one person. If Fusey miss, Huntley cover. If Huntley miss, David Huntley is there. So it can be a team thing.
Let me tell you something. It goes back to a simple thing. And let me use back my 3-on-3 to make it, right? If, and Yogi is right to some extent, but I want to break it down even further. Because I want the team, Jamaica, to succeed.
Yeah.
Which is why I say it's more of a team thing. In union, after the tackle, the rock takes place. Yeah? So, if you're not defending in a unit, who's going to rock out for you?
Yeah.
So, a lot of times, we can execute the one-on-one tackle, but because we're not defending as a unit, because most time, 90% of the time, unless you're Richie McCaw, one of the greats, when you tackle, you have to roll away.
Yeah.
Who's going to be there to rock for you and compete?
Yeah.
So, we have to be defending before we tackle.
Yeah. As a unit.
As a unit.
And that is just ensuring that the whole line stay connected, especially around the breakdown. And whether it is union or it is league.
Yeah, man.
It is something that I don't think much emphasis, as you would have pinpointed, Roy, would have been placed by coaches. They don't place much emphasis on role management for each player within a defensive system. So they know how to convert the tackle, but if it comes where they have to make a decision before converting that tackle, where there is numbers, it's going to always pose a problem. So that is something
exactly
you definitely have to just explore going forward. How it is that we get players beyond developing their skills to convert the tackle, but now what are their roles, league or union, because we just really want to improve that aspect of the game. Because once we can start improve that component of tackling, normally say tries win games, but tackling win championships. Defending unit allow you or give you the best chance to force teams in making mistakes.
There's a simple phrase I use to sum up that. It says, if we score, we might win.
Yeah.
If they score, we can't lose.
Yes.
If they don't score, no, the game might end in a draw, but we can't lose.
Yeah,
can't lose.
You can score 20 and then score 21.
That is something that I really appreciate that you guys shared in terms of the grassroots and what are some of the key things or the key thing that we maybe need to pay some attention to. Now, my next question that I will ask you is, what was your most rewarding experience over your rugby career? Hold that thought for me. We'll be right back. We are back, Ruggers. Yeah. Gentlemen, again, what was the most rewarding experience for you in your rugby career?
Yeah, I touch first.
Well, only that one, they're hard. because you're asking from two sides of the fence now.
Yes, man.
And then from two sides of the fence, you ask me as coach and as player.
Yeah.
So it ticklish. But for me, Osh Yogi, but it was a finals against Vauxhall at Caymanas. And I can tell you why that was rewarding for me is what happened the week prior to that. I don't think I've ever said it to Yogi, but Yogi gave me one tackle, which was probably one of the worst injuries that I've ever had in my life.
Me?
Right? Actually tore. Yes, man.
Ouch.
Actually tore my tore. Yeah, but back in them days, you don't make your opponents know when you're injured. Actually tore my ACL.
I don't make my opponent know when I'm hitting either.
Right? So 2 weeks before, at that time we were playing for UA. And I was also the under 19 coach captain of Calabar. 2 weeks before, we played a game against Vauxhall and I got a tackle and got injured. Only people around my team knew. I couldn't even walk, go home. Robert had to bring me straight to put on in my bed. 2 weeks after that tackle, Calabar faced St. Catherine High in the under 19 finals by Caymanas. And I played in that game, knees strap up everything, played in that game. And Calabar won. That's the first under 19 championship. Calabar, this was in 1998.
Whoa.
That was the first championship Calabar won in 10 years. Under 19. I'm not talking tournament, I'm talking championship.
Yeah.
And right after that game was a senior finals, UA versus Vauxhall. And I remember Greenaway look at me and him say, "How you feel?" And I said, "Coach, I can go." And him say, "All right, guess what? I'm going to sit here for the first half because you just played a really hard game. And if we need you, we will bring you on the second half." And I remember first half finish, nil-all, you win 0, Vauxhall 0. And Applejack came to me, legendary Antonio Burke. He was my number 8. He was my number 8 throughout my entire senior union career.
Whoa.
Come to me and say, "Listen, we need you. Don't worry. Nobody will ever touch you." And whenever senior player come to you as a schoolboy and tell you that, you know, say you are looked after. And make sure I tell you, I played a full half. I did not have to make one tackle. I did not have to take one tackle. You know how we won the game? The game finished 6-0. 2 penalty goals. Whoa. That I was able to convert from about 40 meters out.
Whoa.
On 1 foot.
Whoa.
And for me to win those 2 championships in that one day, and the adversity around it, and for my teammates to know my situation and for them to tell me there was trust there, because whereas I know I could play a schoolboy game injured and yeah, I could have did that on my way through. Seeing a game was different, especially when you have a man like Yogi on the field. And when Apple come to me and say, "Yo, you're good. Nobody now gonna touch you." To have that trust in him, you know, said that, and for him to be looking out for me, for me it was a big thing. So that for me was my biggest accomplishment as a union coach, because I won the under 19. And a union player. No, from league, my last year of league was my most rewarding in terms of I became the only coach to have won the national title and the intercollegiate title in the same year.
Yes, I remember those clearly.
And also won Division 2. For me, that from a records perspective, that was good. But see, for me as a coach, do you know what I find most rewarding? Not playing, you know, not coaching, is knowing that I have helped this young man to transition from being a boy to being a man.
Yeah.
When I look at my players now who are in decent jobs, who start their own businesses and are giving back to rugby, for me, that is more rewarding.
That is really, really amazing, Roy. And that is something that I must commend you on. Tending to the player's total being. Because if you don't tend to the player's total being, you won't be able to have great players. Once you're able to have your total being it is beyond the game, beyond the sport, and you are now impacting the wider community, which is Jamaica, for the greater good of our society. So that is really amazing. Thanks much for sharing, Roy. And for you, love, what was your most rewarding experience playing the sport or
well, career? There's so much. Honestly, there's so much. And I could go back to say, even just when I left, which is way back, which is like in 86, and I took players like Chris Gayle, my brother, and a few more players, from coaching them at Vauxhall and bringing them onto the national side. Me, those were my glory days. Come forward. I'm just gonna step it. I'm just gonna step it as a goal, because there's so much, you know. Coaching you, coming when I got called from New, when I used to live in Florida, and I got the call to come and coach the under 16 team to Saint Vincent.
Oh, him drop.
Yeah, him drop. So me have to just wait a bit. Time him come in, but I'm ask him about the question there. Welcome back, gentlemen. So Coach Love, what was the most rewarding thing that you had over your rugby career?
Well, my most rewarding was coaching the under 16 to the first under 16 Caribbean Championship, and the fact that I took 11 new guys, new players, and add them together and create a team and travel overseas and win a tournament. That is one of my most rewarding moments. There's few other things towards it, where, like I said, you know, making a national as the youngest player back in 86, 87, but that would be my most rewarding moment.
Rewarding things. So for you, it was where you were young, making the team as the youngest player, as well as coaching the 2001 under 16 to the Caribbean Championships in St. Vincent. All right, yes. Not bad. So the next question that I'll ask both of you gentlemen, what drove you to get up and to train or coach every day? So I will start with you, Roy.
There's a saying that says, I'm not really sure what the quote is, but it goes something like, good things happen when opportunity meets preparation. Right? So a lot of times people will think that they don't have the opportunity to do certain things. But it's the same opportunity you'll get as an ex-man and man, you know. The difference is he was prepared and you weren't. So training for me was very important, because as I said, I never considered myself the most talented person. So I think that I was able to outwork my opponents off the field. And that was my advantage. And knowing that when the opportunity arises, I can't afford to let my teammates down and I can't afford to let myself down. So that is what actually drove me for training, knowing that I need to be prepared, because opportunities will arise, that I get a penalty on the halfway line, I need to convert it. Opportunity will arise that I get a scrum on the opponent's 22, middle of the field. I must be able to pass off the right hand and left hand and give my attacking players an opportunity to run onto the ball. So it must be a good pass. So for me, it was always about being prepared for when the opportunity arises.
And that is both as a player and as a coach?
As a coach, for me, it's just making a difference in young men's lives, you know. Because, as I tell you, rugby kept a lot of us out of trouble because it gave us something to do, something else to do. And in doing that something else, you realize that there are so many other possibilities. So for me, it is providing a safe space for both men and women, boys and girls, where they can express themselves through rugby.
Yeah, thanks much for that, Roy. So for you, Coach Love, what drove you to get up and train and to coach every day?
Just my get up every day, coach, have the bond with a younger generation. There's more to life than just hanging out, you know, and the family, the family bond that brings us, you know. And I go back to Chris Gayle and a few other guys who I coach, who come up and not just being a player, but also make it on a national squad alongside me. First drive into every day, and even from going to vaccination, it was the greatest desire coming out of especially coming out of Vauxhall, where there's not much opportunity was there. I think judges had more opportunity. They give them in judges era of more opportunity, which is you and Delano and Huntley, and you know. But just the mere fact that I'm doing something positive for another generation, because it was the same thing that someone for me that gave me that drive to give back, that to me to just get up every day and want to do it.
Yeah, so to train and coach is just really giving back.
It's just giving back, you know. To train was to be the best. I know it. I mean, when I quit playing rugby in my 30s, I was basically known as a stinger. You know?
Yeah.
He knows it, he feels it. Right, sir. Right. So yeah. That was how my thing, just wanna get up, just go play. And you know, as you say, when I separate myself from Vauxhall and I went and started Northern Lions, it was just a drive, you know, having a new face, a new set a young youth around me, but still giving back in a positive way. That's it.
Yeah. Thanks much for sharing that, coach. At least you know that the drive is really just giving back to the youngsters, because that is really, really I really want to ask you this question. What is important to you as an individual?
The most important thing right now is to give somebody, show them that you can't come from the inner city, but it helps me to stay more focused, willing and wanting to give back at all time with open arms. That's just my thing to be right now.
What is important to me is a stable family life. You know, I think I have tried to instill a sense of responsibility and family through my players. And I mean, I am happy to say that most of my players, most of the ones that are the generation just under where I grew up, the ones turning late 20s now, most of them are married with kids and settling down and in jobs, working our own business. That is important. For me, what legacy will I leave behind? How will I be remembered? What impact do I have on anybody's lives that I interact with? I don't know.
Yeah.
Honestly, this might be the last time we are interacting, you know. I don't know. You understand? How will you, if something is to happen now, will it be a positive interaction?
Yeah.
Too many times I've seen where a person say, why you say last time I talked to him, many man argue. I last time me and my wife talk, a cuss with a cuss. If I can leave anything to any rugger at all, is that your legacy. How do you want somebody to remember you? Whether it's your family, your friends, your associates, how you want them to remember you? And if you constantly keep that at the front of your mind, you will try to ensure that every interaction is positive.
Yeah.
Thanks much, Roy. So that's what is important for both of the legends. Really giving back, ensuring that individuals have a sense of purpose beyond playing the sport, thinking about family. Last question in the segment, what are your strengths as a rugger and as a person?
Well, all right, so my strength, I think, has been my ability to think an opponent. Because I said I was never the most physically gifted athlete. Yeah, you know, right. But I think how I made up for it was my ability to read a game. Like a chess game.
Yeah.
You know, so thinking about the game on a cerebral level, I think is my strongest attribute.
Yeah. And as a person, now in terms of everyday life, what is your strongest attribute?
I think it's bringing people together, you know. It's hard to quantify, but my strongest, I think is I'm just a personable individual. I don't like seeing people sad.
Yeah.
You know, so if I want, if a better word, they can describe me as a larrikin.
Yeah.
You know, I'm always joking.
Yeah.
I mean, also I'm coaching. I'm very serious when I'm coaching sometimes. But I mean, in Jamaica, we call it carding.
Yeah.
In Australia, them say you call it gene up somebody.
Yeah.
I'm always doing some sort of wisecrack.
Yeah.
You know, just because in honesty, you know, we play a difficult sport, you know.
Yeah.
I tell him, say it's only a madman I got to see a man twice in size and run go straight and the man at full speed. It's only a madman.
Watch it.
No, it's true.
Yeah.
Only think about it. Our brains initially are wired to avert danger.
Yeah, man.
So it takes a special kind of player to play rugby.
Yes.
You know, my thing is, Yeah man. Yeah, man. You know, and the fact that we're talking about culture, take a special time by human being for a man just tackle you on your face as a dirty tackle and man, mash up your ACL and you can shake the man on earth and smile with him,
drink a beer, you know?
that sounds personal.
Yeah.
Yeah, man.
And you know.
So, as I said, my strength.
You know, as you said that, you know, because, you know, getting both of you in the same place, it was strictly by accident. It is something that was planned to say how put both legends in the same podcast. In fact, you guys would be in the same series, but it was actually supposed to be between you and Christopher Green. But based on the arrangements that we would have had, Christopher Green wouldn't be able to make it for today. So I'm going to be doing a different edition with him alone. It's just amazing that you guys are in the same place now and all the connections that come in together with how it is that the sport would have been developed and that you were in a different era, but you basically... And look at the joy that you guys would have had, even though you are playing on the opposite fence and you could still now end up in a location to say, let's talk or let's have a podcast sharing the experience. It's a joy.
Yeah, it is. Yep. It is.
And I mean, talking about, as I said, I'm always thinking that injury actually helped me to develop what is commonly called a box kick. You know what a box kick is from a scrummer.
Yes, and it is one of the things is
a lot of scrummers in Jamaica don't know what that is, or they can't do it.
Yes, it's difficult because there's no deliberate training activities that some coaches would have used to
exactly.
Kill. Yeah.
So it's like kicking off the back foot.
Yeah.
Take the ball up from the rock. Take a backward step and kick over the top.
Yeah.
I used to kick through the line. But because of that injury and it was allowing me to put pressure on my leg, I had to develop the box kick. So again, it was my ability to look at, all right, I can't do that, but what else can I do? How can I take advantage of this?
Yeah.
I've always had that outlook on life. Don't focus on what you can't do. Look at how you can adjust.
Yeah, what you can control, what you can adapt to.
Yes. Yeah. So thanks, Yogi.
Yeah. Forget me.
My
two coach love, what's your strength as a rugger and what is your strength as just a human being?
Well, as a rugger, my biggest strength was always a team player. You know, my biggest strength is always knowing that teammate is covered. You know, my areas, not just personally, but my whole team. My tackling ability, I've always tried to work on it, to improve it, to make sure, like, it go back to Rai. You see, tackling is there was a thing between me and my brother, where I'm the clean tackler, but I can tackle you hard enough to hurt you. Why my brother have to literally go after you for dirty ways to get penalized?
Yeah. I've only played one season with your brother. One season alone and he was a nasty
rugby player. Very nasty.
Yeah.
He late tackle every time.
I remember you and him getting into it at Cayman State because it was the young Northern Lions that you were developing with youngsters at the time.
Yeah.
And playing against Vauxhall and he was really brutal against the youngsters.
Yeah.
He was a dirty love.
You know, but my strong point was my tackling and, you know, my ability to play any. I have to play from 7s, 10, 15 aside. And I can go from a scrum half, hooker, prop, number 8, fullback, and still hold my ground.
Yeah.
Those were my strong points.
Yeah.
You know, and coaching, Yogi,
you know, some of my Vauxhall retire about trees come up close. <Yeah. laughs> Because you guys were constantly searching for a matchup, you know.
For a matchup. Yeah, I mean.
Yeah, man.
We had our time out playing against each other at Vauxhall, you know. We did. You know, but my strong point was always just that person.
Yeah.
Taking down. Robert.
Robert was a hard runner.
Always a hard runner. So you have to tell him early. I have to always shut him.
Yes,
down.
You never allowed him to pick
you
up.
You don't allow him to pick up.
You never allowed him to pick up.
So Robert has always been my target. Never allow him to pick up.
But you see, Yogi, that's what I was talking about earlier. Yeah. You made a defensive adjustment, not a tackling adjustment.
Yeah. But, you see me? But what I'm saying
is I think though, Roy, between Yogi and like a new generation player, is that Yogi, him already short and him already robust in terms of getting to a player, but as in same strength is his strength is really support. It start from support, and that was the contention that you really had, Roy. That person really don't support or communicate in a line in order to execute and convert that tackle. So really and truly, he was a natural tackler, but the strength of support that he had would have made him a really effective or
more
dominant
effective
rugby player because he was able to tackle 1v1, but at the same time, close gaps around his defense, around the defensive area when opponents might be trying to exploit that space with speed or just getting into the fixing that defender.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yep.
So that
and again,
go ahead, Coach Love.
Yeah, man. And personally, on my personal level now, it's about always getting back, always helping, always want to make sure not just people that I know, when a person tried to touch my country for their in,
yeah,
I want Jamaican to do something, and then they blame the whole Jamaica, and not knowing that people like me, people like you, people like Mr. Calvert, I start Jamaican, and we hold the flag high, you know. So
and we always find ways.
We always find ways in trying to uplift somebody else and not just ourselves.
Yeah.
Even Ryan talking about one of the games that we played. And Ryan, I think it was the Saturday we played that game. And with the, by the Monday, I was at NCB. Carlin Ryan. All right. Take care of an issue for me in the bank. You know?
Yeah. So,
You created a tackle on the field, a person that injured at the game, at the sport. But by the time the game done, it's done. Yeah, we're family again. You know?
Yeah.
Yep.
So that was it. Those are my strong points.
So welcome back, Ruggers. Now it's time for a summary of our takeaways. I will start with you, Roy. Who are some legends known to you? Give me a list.
All right. So for me, I have to talk about the players that I played with and against. I mean, I can't speak much to the players who went before. But for me, you have, locally I can speak to Antonio Burke, AKA Applejack. You have Arvin Lord, Junior Thompson, Robert Stevenson, and Claudien, AKA Chino. For me, they are legends because of players, they are players I played with, but they have also helped to usher me from a boy into manhood.
Yeah. And that is great. Thanks much for sharing that list. Roy, love, what is your list of legends?
Well, my legends, and like one of them, Arvin Lord, natural runner, natural skill, not natural person, you know. Brian McLeod, none of you don't even know anything about them things, them people. The first man that put me under his wing. Show me how to tackle properly. That's a legend. Pete Jackson.
Yeah, that's a legend. Jack
himself. You see me?
Yes.
Ken Cole. That's a legend. Major McCoy. A legend.
Yeah.
All right. Do I reach five yet or do I keep going? You know,
you can keep going. Give me two more or three more.
You know, I said, so. We have Kevin Rasquino. Yeah. These players won't even know who Rasquino is. Yeah. Tippy Leon Sr.
Wow.
Those are legends. All right. Those are the guys I'm talking about. Me in rugby around legends, people that support you. I mean, like I said, and I proudly say it, those are some of the days when I couldn't afford that. I couldn't afford a hotel fare. And those are players that put up money. Not just for me, but for guys like Chris Gayle and some of the other youth them. Those where legend came from. You see what I mean?
Thanks.
People who are not, they're not selfish. That's what makes my legend to me.
Yeah, thanks much. Thanks much for sharing that. So my next question that I will ask you guys is, if you could sum up what motivates all those legends, what would that summary be?
For me, one word, brotherhood.
Wonderful.
Selflessness.
Wonderful, wonderful. What was the secret for your performance at the highest level that you played?
For me, it's preparation. You know? It's preparation and always being ready. You know, you have a game coming up in June. Ideally, you need to start getting ready 4 months before. You know, you have players who start, June is a game and they start training in May. You know, so for me, it's always been prepared. And I always feel like I'm the driver of the bus, you know. Being the scrum half, I always believe that I own the team.
We should.
You know, it is my responsibility. Yeah, man, it's my responsibility to get the team in a particular position where we can execute an attacking set. You know, so I have to be more prepared than the man to my left and the man to my right. I need to know what plan the coach needs us to execute. I need to have a feedback from the coach. I need to be able to feedback to him what I think the team needs to accomplish. And then I need to go away and prepare by myself long before the general team starts preparation.
Thanks much for that, Roy. And for you, Yogi, what's your secret for your performance at the highest level that you have played?
Well, I said preparation. Because for one thing, for me, I've always been ready. I'm always training. I never find anything else to do. Feel when I go out there, I'm inside center or outside center, whether I'm playing in a sevens as from off, a winger, I'm always prepared. I'm always 24/7, just training. And mentally, I think that's what helping me right now in whatever I'm doing. It's because I'm always prepared. I'm always one step ahead. You know, like Ryan says, don't wait until tournament time to start training. I used to live in Bull Bay, where Bob Marley Beach is like right there, a stone throw. I don't remember when the tour, and I took you guys to my house
for the
weekend, the train. And upstairs, we were like showing you guys the view of the beach. You know?
Yeah. In fact, I remember it clearly because that training session was maybe one of the most grueling training sessions I would have ever had. Yeah. In terms of training, yeah, man, sans training is not normally easy.
Training. That was my drive all the time. Being ready, be prepared. And I passed it on to you guys, even as a coach, junior, school. But that's what, if you realize, it's just the person I am. And I bring even right now over into my business personality. I'm always prepared.
So the last question that I will ask you, gentlemen. What challenges did you face as a legend, and how did you overcome those?
All right. For me, I have a particular instance. I think, and I've always viewed it as a curse. All right. I think for me, I got into coaching way too early. In terms of, I started coaching from high school. And I can tell you, as a youngster who wants to play and has to focus on play and coaching while trying to develop yourself at the time, it is rough. So I started coaching Calabar when I was in lower six, because by that time Salesman had left. I started coaching in lower six, and it was difficult to judge yourself when you're coaching. And it actually took me over into league when I started playing in 2011. We had Sharks versus Vauxhall in the grand finals. So Sharks had been to 5 previous finals and lost.
Whoa.
And yeah, man. 5 in 7 years and lose all 5. This was our 6th grand finals. And, you know, I sat down with Romeo, who was a coach at that time, and I said to him, I'm going to be targeted. I think their game plan revolves a lot around targeting me. So I will have to pull myself from the game at some point. And for me, that was a very difficult decision as a captain, as a senior player. But then I realized that if I played for like the first 20 minutes, come off for the next 20, don't start the second half, but finish the game like the last half an hour, it would have disrupted their plans. Because with me not on the field, they'd have to change their game plan. So, but that's difficult only. And you know, as a player, you know, I feel like in your prime,
you're going to be targeted.
You know, for you to, but for you to take a stance, and you know other people probably going to look at it as you backing down. But then when you look within yourself and realize that there's a greater achievement that you're chasing, there's a greater accomplishment that the team, and also there's a cerebral part of it too. Because even though to myself I said, all right, I am going to take myself out of the game, it's rough, I've never done this before, cerebrally I know that it's going to disrupt the opponents as well. So I prepared myself not to play the entire game. They did not prepare themselves to not have me on the field. So for me, that selflessness was difficult, but necessary. And it took me a good while to basically make that decision. And even after, it took me up until 2015 to get over it. Because the reason for that is that I did not go into another finals again until 2015. Where I played the entire game 2015 and I felt like I was instrumental in the team winning, especially in overtime. So again, it was difficult, but sometimes as leaders too only, we need to step back.
We
need to realize that it's not about me. It's about the team.
That is one of the things that you have about your Roy as a legend for me, is that you would have had emotional intelligence. You know, you know how to sense or to read stuff, as you say, in terms of a tactical perspective, or look at behaviors or see how the game pans out. And that's why you couldn't be able to make that decision to be selfless. Yes, you want to play, but if all the energies of the opponents would be focusing on you and would not give the team the best chance to win, you decided to just remove yourself at some point so that it would disrupt their tactical advantage that they might have. That is good. Thanks much for sharing that, Roy. So for you, Coach Love, what challenges as a legend did you encounter? And how did you deal with it?
Well, my biggest challenges as a legend would have been more like when I stepped back from Vauxhall, I decided to stop playing rugby. Because I think once I started Northern Lions, I was more a owner of a club and a coach and no more a player. And that was my legendary time. When I had enough, you know, and when I took you guys, Northern Lions, started my own club and prepare you guys to go out there and know saying it's not me anymore as a player, but I'm a coach.
Yes.
My legend. You know what I'm saying? I started to present you guys now, not anymore as a school player, but now as a club.
I can just imagine that, because I have gone through that phase as well. It is difficult when you're playing at the top of your game, or you know that you can play at a particular level, and then it's my point where you just hang up your boots
and
focusing on either coaching or focusing on the needs of others. And you know it's just so tempting to say, let me insert myself in the game. But you know, for the greater good, instead of you do that, you started a club, you want the players to be playing. So it is really about just transfer of that knowledge so that it don't last along the way.
There you go.
And that is difficult. And that's one of the most difficult things as a coach. My last competitive game was in 2015. I was 34 years old. I decided that's it. Won the grand finals. I have nothing else to prove. May I go away? Well, I'm going to walk away off into the sunlight. Yeah, man, that's how me view it. But then you're coaching and you feel like you're still young enough to play. And sometimes you want to be tempted to coach the players to play the way that you played.
Well, the difference with me right here.
But then you have to realize that.
Go ahead.
Yeah, so I'm saying as a coach only, especially as a young coach, and I know you might have the challenge as well, and Yogi spoke about it. There are times that you feel like, no, but it's not so hard. We used to do it. You know, why we can't do this? And you're tempted, but then as a coach and as you go through your coaching life, you realize that every player is different.
Yeah.
Right? Every player is different, and you can't treat every player. No, you have to learn what is called being a man manager. You have to manage the players individually. Yeah. There are some players who like their ego stroke, and once you stroke it, he might be the best player in the world. While there are some players where you can cuss out publicly, and you get a response.
You know, to that, right? It's like when I decided to step is when I know, when I look and take in judges. Only Anderson, Delano Thomas, Delano Fuller, David Hudson, O'Neill McCullough, Stephen Richardson, Kevin. I mean, when I took those guys from what? Nothing. 6 months. Going to finals with Denham Town. And last, yeah. I knew then that I could have. But you know why? I know I already created my position. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? Because these players,
yeah.
I took most of these guys to the 3 Caribbean Championship back to back to back and win them and come home. I knew I was ready. I knew I was ready to hang it up. So yes, that was like, my legend moment.
As I say, I see that and I would have really reflected on most of that, because most of what it is that I would have been doing the last 19 years is really tracing back some of the things that I would have been exposed to playing and looking at how it is that I can tweak it to make it better for the next set of youngsters coming in terms of their experience traversing it. And as you said it just now, when for both of you, for Roy, you would have started coaching back in your sixth form year. In fact, that year when you would have coached in your sixth form year, it was one of the year that you would have beaten Georges at the finals for Sevens, the Easter Sevens, which is now known as the Jacob Thompson Sevens. And I could remember it was very tactical in terms of how it is that you beat us. I, as a player coach at the time, I would have been young and never understood either some of the principles or the components there. It would have just been what Coach Love would have instilled me as a youngster to really transfer that into playing and coaching. And that was difficult because I wouldn't know how to handle playing versus coaching. It was just more about ensuring that we play throughout the tournament. So there was no man management. There was no technical or tactical thing about how it is that we executed. So it's for me, these challenges will encounter them once we would have reached the stage of saying we are going to maybe hang up our boots, or we are going to be making the transition from player to coach, or from player to official. We're going to always encounter these challenges. It is just how best we as individuals are prepared to deal with those. And the key thing that I got from both of you is that you had patience. And this is what I would want the listeners to really take away. When you're going through these difficult transitions from whether you're a player to a coach, or a coach to being retired, and you might be starting a club or you might be starting programs, don't be tempted to insert back yourself into the game. Try your best to be patient and allow the youngsters to develop. Use different things, different methods to engage persons, but learn the styles and learn what is best in order to get the best out of the group or the program that you would have been implementing.
Yeah.
Thanks much, gentlemen. I really appreciate you guys coming out. It is really a pleasure having you guys here discussing rugby, discussing life. Know that you guys don't consider yourselves to be legend because you guys are just that humble. But for me, I really consider you guys as two of my legends or icons within the local context. And I really look up to you guys in terms of how it is that you have developed youngsters over a period of time and the continued work that you guys are doing, whether or not you have teams, whether or not you're coaching, whether or not it is that you're employing youngsters in the sport. I really appreciate it. And you guys will always be legends of mine or icons of mine based on all the encounters that I would have had with you or I would have viewed within the game when you are playing. So thanks again, gentlemen. It is really a joy for having you here on this podcast, Legendary.
Yeah, man, it was a pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, man, it's a pleasure.
Thank you, Ruggers, for listening to Beyond the Tryline. Stay tuned for the next episode.